So today's episode, we're going to talk about who decides what kids should learn. And this is usually the State Board of Education in your respective state. So who are those people and how do they end up being on the State Board?
The Family Freedom Podcast, voices of family and freedom. Now here's your host, Wendy Hart.
Today, I am joined by Elisa Ellis. She served 2.5 years on the Utah State Board of Education. She is the mother of 7 and the grandmother of 1. And she's going to talk to us about her experience on the State Board and what we need to know about that. Welcome, Elisa.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So tell me, first of all, how did you, you have a very interesting story. How did you get involved in and ending up running for the State Board, getting involved in politics and all of that?
Well, it started out as a parent-teacher conference where I was introduced to this new little program that was going to be so exciting and great called the Common Core State Standards. And I just could not get rid of the pit in my stomach that something wasn't right. And I just started researching and researching and then was connected with other people and was able to eventually become compelled to run for office. And it was a series of pushes and shoves, I felt like, from my father in heaven to become more involved, be active. I was one who had never voted before, didn't think that anything like that mattered. And all of a sudden, the world around me mattered so much, and that those who were in office had such an impact on my family and what my children were being taught, how they were being taught. And every single election mattered all of a sudden. And it compelled me to eventually run for office myself so that I could help have my voice and those that thought like me heard.
Wow. So you went from virtually no involvement in politics, not ever
not
having voted, to being elected to a statewide office.
Yes. In a matter of, what, 8 years or so?
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. So I know in part of what's motivating me is currently in our Utah legislative session, we have a proposal to change our constitution to go from an elected board. Right now we have 15 elected members, and I know it's different from state to state, but our board is elected, and it's right. Done geographically. So you represented a particular area of the state. And so tell me about the election and give me your insights on elected versus appointed.
Well, first of all, I represented parts of 6 counties, over 200,000 people.
That's a lot.
It was a lot of people, and it was as many people at least as my U.S. House representative.
Oh, in Congress, yeah.
In Congress, close to it. I covered the same area as like 4 different state senators and even more House members at the state level. It was a huge geographical area. And I mean, the boundaries are set up to reflect the same population. But because I lived in a more rural area, I had one of the larger geographical areas to cover. Yeah. And it was huge. But the election, the year I was elected, our state had been run by a quasi-appointed system. And the reason why it was not truly appointed is that the governor's office, people would submit kind of a resume, an application to run for the State Board of Ed. The governor's office would interview them and they would narrow it down to 3 candidates. Was it 3 or 2?
I think it was 3 that the committee would narrow it down to.
The committee would narrow it down. And anyways, those names would then be put on a ballot too.
Right. Well, I thought it went through, then the governor picked 2 or something.
Oh, yes. Okay. Something.
It's been a few years.
Anyway, so then those were narrowed down to be on the ballot. And then the populace got to then select through vote their representative on the State Board of Ed. Now, the interesting thing is my friend ran for office in 2012, and one of the first questions on this application was, do you support the Common Core state standards? Now, that right there narrowed it down. And so if you'll remember, we did an experiment. Utahns Against Common Core did an experiment the next election cycle, and we had tons and tons of people run.
Right. In my area, there were 9 candidates.
Right. We just asked everybody that could even think about possibly doing this run for office. And the only person that made it through that process did it through a legal battle.
Right.
And ended up taking the seat.
The only person who opposed Common Core on their application
had to go to court. Thank you for clarifying that.
Yes. And he was the one that was elected from my area.
Right.
So when people were given the choice of, do I want someone who is pro-Common Core or anti-Common Core, the people in my area chose the guy that said, no, I'm opposed to it. Whereas right. everybody else that went through the governor's process, they all were the pro-Common Core. Or right. either that or they didn't come out with a strong opinion.
Right. So then you fast forward to the next election cycle, which was mine, which was a presidential year, which typically brings out a lot of voters.
Right.
And
they're much more moderate, mainstream, you know, you don't have, right. you know, one side or the other, really.
Right, right. But it was really interesting as I was on the campaign trail, because I had multiple people who weren't passionate about the presidential election, didn't feel like they had anybody that they really stood behind. And they said, you are the reason I'm going to the ballot. They didn't know me.
Wow.
One man came to an event, and after talking to me for an hour, he said, I'm now going to vote. You gave me a reason to vote. I did not have a reason to vote in this election, and now I do. And that spoke volumes. One of our representatives likes to tell people that nobody knows who the state school board is, and therefore it needs to be an appointed board. That's one of the reasons why they choose to go that route. But I saw more passion in that election than I've seen in any of my House or Senate races from where I lived in Utah. And people knew who we were. They were passionate about it. I had a county Republican GOP chair call me and said, people don't call and give donations to state school board races, but people are calling me, they're giving me money, telling me to help you, and asking why we aren't doing more. Now that speaks volumes.
Well, and,
I wasn't even running as a Republican.
Right, right. I was going to say these were nonpartisan races. And so
right.
you've got a political party saying, hey,
right.
that's amazing. Well,
I got off track just a little bit. So the next election cycle, there had been a lawsuit where a judge deemed that quasi-appointed system as unconstitutional. And so the state legislature enacted a... They just said, okay, this year all the elections are going to be nonpartisan for the state boards of ed. And so my year was the first year in a very long time where the people were actually getting to vote for who represented them on the state board of ed. It wasn't going through any type of a narrowing down process. It was going through, I mean, there were some primaries that were held.
Right.
So that was the narrowing down process, but it wasn't through any type of artificial
government board,
government
appointed
bureaucracy type of system. And that, the result of that was this passion behind the races that we hadn't seen in a long time. People cared who was going to represent them. And by this time, this is now 2016.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
sorry, just trying to go back in time a little bit. And Common Core had been on the books now
right.
for a while.
People had experienced it.
Yes, and you and I were part of a movement that took that to a nationwide conversation. And I remember when I first got a call from someone in D.C., he was like, this was just a couple of people sitting around talking about Common Core and being worried about it. And because everyday moms and dads all of a sudden got involved and became passionate about this issue, a grassroots movement took off. And that's what happened was people the mama bears woke up,
right,
so to speak. And anyway, so
well, when you can't help your kid with math.
Yeah. So people did care. They had a huge stake in these elections because they knew that it wasn't working to go to the local boards. The local boards were throwing their hands up saying, we have no control over this. This is out of our hands. It wasn't working to try to go to the national level because it's really hard to have your voice heard. That's why the more local, more local, more local, the most local you can get is the best representation because it's mm-hmm. easier to contact them. It's easier to have your voice heard.
Well, and when they see you face to face, there's greater investment. If
right.
you know, when you talk to well, when you talk to any elected official and you can look them in the eye, then it's much more important than
yes.
than policy. All of a sudden there's that human to human factor that
right.
speaks so much more to the heart and soul of what's going on.
It's true.
And I don't think you can communicate that through, you know, through policy and things like that. And I know
right.
you and I had some opportunities in that that year to meet with many different elected officials because they had met one-on-one with people who had concerns.
Right.
And it brings it much more home to them than opposed to, you know, you're sitting around a conference table and some policy wonk says, hey, well, you know, there are just a couple people that have concerns about XYZ.
Right, but, which is how it's always played.
It is. It's always, well, it's just a small vocal minority. I know when
right.
I ran for re-election that my opponent said that there were just, you know, it's just a small vocal minority that really had concerns. And that's, you know, and it's great that I was passionate and out there and standing publicly against Common Core, but it, you know, it was just a small vocal minority. Well, I won with 58.8% of the vote. That's not a small
right.
vocal minority. That and it was the same thing, what you're describing.
Right.
The passion, you'd knock doors and people don't go around and say, you know what, I really want to have my principles trained better. No,
right.
it for me, it was the math, right? And we've
right.
talked about that math. Oh, my goodness.
right. Yes, it's so bad.
It's so bad. But when it comes down to your kid trying to help your kid, and if it's not working for your kid, then all of a sudden you're looking around trying to figure out, how do I fix this?
Right.
And what we've found is that because of any number of issues right now, every state board of education is responsible for setting the standards and this dictate and the tests, and that dictates what is taught in the classroom. So it doesn't
right.
matter how good your teacher is or how much they may want to assist you in what you want your kid taught. If the state board of ed says, no, we're doing it this way and we're enforcing it with a test, that's
right.
the way it's going to happen.
Right. Well, and you'll remember this back in 2012. I mean, we're veering a little bit off topic, or I'm going to.
That's fine.
The charter schools were set up to be something different. People were choosing a charter because they wanted something different.
Right.
I'm not going to go into good or bad. It's just that's what it was set up to be, is kind of a laboratory of experimentation, and let's see if we can do something a different way. And
right. We had
are.
14, I believe, when I was elected in 2010, we had 14 different charter schools in the geographic boundaries of the school district.
Wow.
14.
Yeah.
And all but one were based on a traditional math.
Right.
And that's why the parents were going there.
Right. Well, and that's what I was going to say, is I was on the State Board of Ed. One of my assignments was to be the liaison between the State Board of Education and the State Charter Board of Education, which we oversaw. And I sat in those monthly board meetings. I was a non-voting member, but every month almost, Charter Board would come and talk about how they had been failing to be accountable to
test.
The system, to
test.
The test, to the test, or to the system, which, you know, it's all part of this whole thing, until they threw out their curriculum, adopted better Common Core aligned curriculum, and then all of a sudden they're succeeding. And the reason why is because the tests aren't just testing answers, they're testing the process of how you achieve it.
Right.
And so that creates a singular system, a singular way of thinking. And, you know, it is taking choice out, not creating more choice. But the thing that I found was so interesting is so many charters in 2012, I would talk to them and they'd be like, I'm all for you. I believe in parent choice. I believe in parent-led education. But we are above Common Core. We are better than mm-hmm. Common Core. This will not affect us. We'll keep doing what we're doing because we are better. And then fast forward to what I just explained, that charter after charter was switching out. And maybe you should share your story about the charter you helped found.
Yeah, well, I mean,
or save that for another day.
Yeah, well, every one of the charters, with the exception of one. So remember, we started with 13 out of 14 that were teaching traditional math. And right. when I founded the charter, and this was in 2005 or 6, I was on a founding board of a charter school specifically to get traditional math taught to my kids. And this predates Common Core because we had, you know,
right.
Common Core was just an extension of lousy right. math practices. But every parent who came to our open house to find out about the charter school that we established, we would ask them, why are you interested in our charter school? And every parent, first or second, said that their number one or two reason was the math. They wanted their kids to get a traditional math education.
Right.
And they weren't getting it in the public regular district school system.
Right.
And that's why they were going to charters. Now, of those 13, I believe there's only one left that still teaches a traditional math.
Wow.
In our geographic area.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. And it's sad to me that the people don't see what's happening. And the charter board is an appointed board. And so often there is little oversight by the people of what's happening there.
Right.
So.
Well, and I know when I think it was in 2012 or 2011, there was a math meeting held up at the state board of ed. And it, uh-huh. you know, it wasn't board members, it was staff, and then representatives of the different schools, including charter schools, came and talked about it. And somebody had a recording of it that I got to hear. I don't know if it was legal or not. I shouldn't say that out loud.
In Utah, it's legal.
Okay, good.
You record anything you want.
Anyway,
California, you have to tell them.
You have to tell them.
Utah, you can record whatever you want.
Anyway, so they just shared this with me because it was so fascinating that they did, you know, that everyone was saying, oh, yeah, you can choose whatever you want. Every single charter said their only concern with the new set of standards was, would they be able to teach Saxon math? Would they be able to teach traditional math? Right. And they were told repeatedly, yes, you can choose whatever curriculum you want.
Right.
And
they're
yet,
still being told that.
They're still being told that. And yet every single charter is changing. And the parents are getting together and they're very, very upset. And the charters are losing parents because if you're going to get the same thing taught at your district school and you get a bus there, well, why would you spend time driving your kid to the charter school, right? So we're reducing choice. Like you said, we're not expanding it. And so right. now in Utah, there's this proposal to make all of the State Board of Education members appointed by the governor or however the legislature comes up with it, but not elected.
Right. Well, this is going to create a monolithic system of education.
Right.
And it's all about control. That's what it is. So the reason why we had an appointed board in the first place is because whoever was in power at the time felt like the board was veering a certain direction,
mm-hmm.
too liberal, too conservative, whatever. Well,
wherever you are. Yeah.
Yeah. And so then they changed the structure to have more control over what's taught. And then as soon as they realize, well, that's not working, we aren't getting enough control, we just try to challenge that and change it again. And that's what's happening right now. We had very conservative board members elected the cycle where it was fully elected.
Wow.
Very conservative board members. There's 15 board members. I think there were 7 or 8 seats up the year I ran for office. Half of them were filled by really conservative people.
More conservative than what the board had been in the past.
Yes. more conservative than what the board had been in the past.
And yet some of that, and I don't even know if it's fair to say that it's conservative versus liberal, but it was more grassroots versus,
core.
Yeah, it was because Common Core is not a partisan
issue. It's true.
Issue. It's partisan. I mean, you know, across the board, you know, right. liberal, conservative, everybody seems to hate it right. unless you're in power.
Right.
And then you love
right.
it.
Well, in Utah, it's called a ultra far right conservative movement. Well, I've spoken in New York, and in New York,
it's ultra left wing.
The liberals who were opposed to this, and you're right, it is not a left right thing. In fact, we helped create that, you know, Facebook group.
Yeah, the left right alliance. Yeah,
where we said, okay, let's see what we can agree on together, and let's, you know, do something. And that was a beautiful thing of different ideologies coming together and focusing on the common goals that they had, the same belief systems that they have, and that can work anywhere with any issue.
Right. But every parent wants their kid to be right. properly educated, and when it's not working, right. Your ideology goes out the window. If your kid doesn't right. know the times tables,
yeah,
who cares?
So going back to this monolithic system, which I think it's fascinating. So when I was elected, you had men and women running for office,
mm-hmm.
but of the 8 seats, one seat that was elected was that of a male. The rest were females. So we had 7 new women on the board.
But nobody was running as vote for me because I'm a woman. It was
no,
the
nobody
ideas,
was running.
Right?
I'm a woman. But it's just interesting. It was almost like, you know, people wanted that perspective.
It was the mama bear.
Right. And now that we've had myself, my friend Lisa, and some other board members have had to resign for different reasons. A couple of us had job opportunities for our husbands that moved us out of state, and we had to resign. Well, what happens in between election years is that then that is a fully appointed position. So my poor constituents, I apologize for this part of it, but you know, they're left without representation for their voice, and those that were put in to fill our place. It's just interesting how many men are being put in, and so the bureaucracy is trained to balance the scales, so to speak.
But physically,
gender.
But not
right.
ideologically,
physically,
right?
But not ideologically, right? So. I don't know really anything about the person that stepped in to replace me. I just know that they are not as conservative as I am.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's nothing right or wrong about that, but the people voted for my voice.
Mm-hmm.
They voted for a conservative voice.
And, well, and at that time it was an anti-Common Core voice.
Right. Yes. And it's just
and traditional math.
More,
and...
right. Right. And we're switching to be more of a bureaucracy type of voice is what I've noticed watching the board is
mm-hmm.
that more of them are just kind of part of the bureaucracy type of way of thinking.
And, well, it's the control, right? So if you have right. an appointed board, then the accountability goes to whoever has appointed you.
Yes.
If you have an elected board, it's the
right.
people.
Well, there's some states that are set up different ways. And I had a conversation my first year going back to Washington, D.C. after being elected. I met the youngest state board member in the country. And this was a young, I think she was 23 at the time. She had been in office like 3 years already.
Wow.
And their board was made up of both appointed and elected. And when I was there, I met another woman that was on that board, and she was like, oh, I know you. She had watched some of our Common Core videos, and she was just so excited and giddy to meet me. And at first I thought she was thinking I was someone else, and then I realized that she had watched some of the presentations we'd put out, and she was appointed. So we had an elected board member standing next to an appointed board member, but this appointed board member kind of just made it through because she was African American. And so it was more of a, well, we've got to diversify the board, but they didn't necessarily pay attention to how she thought. And she said that someone from the governor's office in her state said, remember who put you here when she started stepping out of line, so to speak.
She was
put in place. Like, you remember who put you here. And she was like, I don't care who put, you know, I don't care who put me here. I think like this, and, you know, I'm not scared of being taken out of office, so to speak. But I just thought that was very interesting. But the elected board member said that there's a great divide on their board, because half of them are very focused on representing the people. The other half, as you said, are very focused on making sure that they represent who appointed them.
Wow. That I had not even thought about that, because we always hear about the, you know, their divisions on the board. And, you know, when you got elected your year, we always heard locally how the state board was so dysfunctional because they had disagreements. But, you know, when I was elected, I was surprised at how we were basically told we were not to disagree. We were to be lockstep, and whatever administration told us, that's what we were supposed to do.
When we got elected to the board, man, I thought it was beautiful. The discussions. I mean, we had a couple of board members who were also elected who openly declared themselves socialist.
Mm-hmm. So you've got ultra far right, ultra far left. And let me guess, you all got along.
We all got along. Now, we didn't always agree. We, you know, you get
policy,
a little bit of
whatever.
You get a little bit of a hoof when you're in the discussion, but we'd go sit down to lunch and had so much fun getting to know these people and thinking like that. In fact, one of our most liberal board members said, Elisa, I rarely disagree with you, but most people just aren't good parents, or most people don't do things like you do, or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's kind of the perception that they have. But it, you know, it's just interesting because that was also about control. I mean, that statement is, I agree with you, but most people aren't going to make the right choice, and so therefore we need to put in some guardrails, is what they like to call them, mm-hmm. to protect the people from falling off the cliff, because they just don't know enough to protect themselves.
Well, and I think that goes,
make sure to label, do not put a plastic bag over your head.
Yeah. don't pour hot coffee on your lap.
Right.
Yeah.
Guardrails.
Well, but then that goes back to this idea, who gets to decide what our kids should learn? And from the founding of this country, you know, when I first ran for election, I found this wonderful quote by Thomas Jefferson that I'm going to not quote correctly, but he basically said that it needs to be the parents who are deciding. Right. And he mentions the governor and a council specifically as not being the best way to do it. And he said, you know, education needs to be about the parents deciding what their kids should learn. And the farther away you get from the parents, the more it seems that we've, you know, nobody's happy. And it's this group who's in power, and they put something in and they don't like it. So then you have another group that comes in from the opposite side that puts stuff in. And so then, you know, so nobody can agree on what we're supposed to teach our kids. And yet when you sit down and you talk to your neighbors, pretty much everybody's there's a core of things that they want their kids to learn. Right. And we don't need to go to, you know, outside conferences to find out what that is.
No, we don't. And I just wanted to go back a little bit to this Thomas Jefferson quote that you were mentioning, because I find it interesting. He specifically says, you know, it's a belief against all beliefs to think
against all experience.
All experience to believe that it would be better handled by governors. And he lists all these bureaucratic people,
organizations
better than parents. And, you know, that is a belief that stands the test of time, because nobody cares more about your kids than you do. Now, granted, there are parents that abuse kids. There are. I mean, none of us are pretending that every parent is perfect, but it's such a minority.
Yes.
To base education policy and anything else on these
outliers,
scenarios, mm-hmm. and outliers is a belief against all experience, really.
Yeah.
And the fact that we do that is unbelievable, because in essence, we're punishing all those that are doing well. I went to a conference when I was first elected in Salt Lake, and the lieutenant governor had the NGA, which is the National Governors Association, they came in and they were doing a conference about pre-K. And they had this neuroscientist there. And this neuroscientist started talking about the songbird. And when they tried to artificially teach the songbird how to sing, they took a little stuffed bird and they put the voice, they recorded the music of the mother bird and they put it in the bird and they set it next to the baby trying to teach it its song. And they could not reproduce it artificially.
Wow.
The bird could not learn its song.
But it was an actual recording of the mother.
Yes. But there's more.
There's more than just the audio.
Learning the song than just the audio.
Wow.
And it was such a powerful thing to me. And they're using it as a case for pre-K because they were saying we need to help these lower class people that don't know how to be.
I know it is.
And I think you should share that story wide and far that I've heard you share before, or maybe I'm thinking of someone else, but that's the way of thinking is that we've got to help these poor people that are lower in the socioeconomic scale and don't know how to be good parents, basically. Oh. And I raised my hand and I said, look, you're using this as a mechanism to put more kids in an artificial system that's taking them younger out of their home when the majority of people are doing it well. They do know what they're doing. So what happens to those families that are nurturing and are teaching their baby the song? You're now taking them out of the natural environment and you're putting them in the artificial environment. What are we doing to them?
Wow.
And man, they were up in the TV. Everybody brought me their card. Like, well, you people came up to talk to me, wanted to know like how they could correct my thinking.
And... yeah, correct your thinking.
Anyway, but they couldn't answer the question.
Yeah.
Like, no, we wouldn't want to harm, you know? And I'm like, but it's what you're doing.
Right.
Because what we're saying is optional. I think another bill you have on the books this year, or trying to get on the books is to have mandatory kindergarten.
Yes.
Right now it is optional, but most people don't know it's optional. They think everyone says that we must do this and this is how we produce a good environment for our kids. And so we put them into school younger and younger because it's what is the norm. And now they're trying to make that mandatory. But
well, because you know, we now accept that the experts, especially at young ages, it's the same argument, right? That the experts know better than the parents. Sweden is a good example of why that's not good. But you and I have a friend who says that parents must always be the experts of their own children.
Right.
And
right.
In our society, we have so many messages to tell parents you're not the expert. And especially when you're a young mom, I don't know if you were this way, but I was. It's like I didn't want to screw it up. And so you're listening and taking in all of this information. And if somebody challenges you, you think maybe I don't know best. But the reality is you're living with your kid 24/7. You're seeing them, you're understanding them. And there was a moment with my youngest child, we had some experts coming in for various reasons. And one of the experts, I said something to her about how I loved to sing to my daughter. She was just little. And that she understood things and lit up and learned things better through song.
Yeah.
And the expert said to me, she says, I should start doing that with all of my patients because I'd forgotten about that.
Right.
And it was at that moment I realized that was because they don't know my child the way that I know my child. And my child came to me and I understand her better than anybody on this planet.
It's true.
And so I can and should listen to the voices around me and especially the experts. I'm not saying don't take your kid to the doctor, right?
There's valuable information there.
But there are those moments where you do know best. And if parents could have that understanding of go with your gut because 9 times out of 10, you're going to get it right on that.
Right.
And so Yes, and that's what this all comes back down to, is at the end of the day, when you're sitting there helping your kid with math or English or whatever, and you're seeing them struggle or you're seeing them succeed, you're in a better position to know whether or not the education system is working for your kid. And right. if it is, then you need to let those people that are in charge know. And if it's not, then as Jefferson says in the Declaration, he says, then we need to alter or abolish that system of government right. and set up new guards that will protect those liberties, that will, and in education, that will give our children that education. And that's what right. this country was founded on, was we are the guardians of our liberty as the right. people, as the sovereign people. And as long as we've got it set up and it's working according to, you know, what we need, and we're protecting those inalienable rights, well, then great. But at the point that it's not working, which I would argue we did in, you know, with the state board, it wasn't right. working with the governor appointed committee.
No, it wasn't.
And the people no. didn't like it.
Right.
And when they got the opportunity to vote for themselves, for their state board members, there was passion that people didn't have even for a presidential right. election. And that's
well, and
amazing.
It's interesting. It's interesting because I forgot about this part. So out of the 8 elected, you had 4 ultra conservative and 4 that leaned more liberal than what the appointed were. And what that told me is that people wanted a representative that stood for something.
Something. Yes.
They wanted somebody that stood for something. Because too many times the representatives, if you watch carefully people in office, they often will not give a strong answer because they want to appease both sides of the aisle.
Yeah, so or whatever the argument is. Yeah.
Whatever the argument is. And people were hungry for somebody that was willing to take a stand on something.
Mm-hmm. And even if you disagree with them, I've had conversations like that with, you know, there are people that I will vote for because I know where they stand rather right. than, you know, even if I disagree with 90% of it, if they're willing to take a stand and be honest and ask questions, to me, that's more important
right.
than telling me what I want to hear and then doing something else.
Right. Well, and I think it's really important what you talked about, knowing and listening to that voice within you that tells you what your child needs to know.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we were talking about the experts, I feel like that whole thing is just such a big lie. And I'm going to get a little bit religious because I do believe in a higher power, and I believe in Satan. I believe in a devil who tries to get us to go against our natural instincts mm-hmm. and to follow the wrong way. And I feel like one of the biggest lies that the adversary tells us is that we aren't good enough and we do not know. But you look at experts and they all have a different opinion. You can take any issue. I mean, you can yeah. talk about coconut oil. You can talk about whatever it is. You take an issue and there are experts that line up on both sides of an issue, have different arguments, different perspectives, will tell you absolutely this is the right way to do it. When I was having my kids, I felt like from one kid to the next, the rules changed overnight. They need to sleep on their back. They need to sleep
on their stomach.
They sleep on their stomach. They can't drink whole milk until they're 12 months. Oh, they can start here. Oh, they can, you know, the rules changed every single time.
Butter,
you know,
and
you
margarine.
You should be giving them sugar water. You should start feeding them baby cereal at 2 months. Oh, no, they don't need anything until they're 6 months old. The rules change. And you have to sometimes, you can look at all of that, like you said, for advice. And then you've got to just go with what feels right. Is my child hungry and not getting enough? You know, maybe I do need to start feeding them and supplementing them with something. Oh, my baby seems satisfied. They're sleeping well. They're doing things. I'm giving them enough. I mean, there's just so many things like that that the experts cannot come to an agreement on. And that's where you have to step in. My daughter said when she was a new mom with my sweet grandbaby that she was trying to do it right. And she didn't want to come across as not knowing what she was doing. So instead of asking those that she knew she was trying to handle everything on her own. Mm-hmm. And when you Google something, you get millions and millions of results. And it was so overwhelming until she realized what she was doing. She took a step back from that way of thinking, and she started calling the people that were closest to her to ask for advice, mm-hmm. and then trusting in herself. And man, she's such a great mom, and it's just fun to watch.
Wow. That's so neat. And I think that if I could give parents, new parents, any advice at all, it is to trust yourself. Yes. Listen, but then trust. And then that goes back. So we'll just wrap this up this way, that when you go back to education, parents are going to be the best judge of what right. is working and what is not working. And if it's the most wonderful program in the world, but it's not working for your kid, then you don't care about the experts.
Right.
And at the end of the day, whether it's state board of ed, local board of ed, whoever is making these decisions, they have to be accountable to the people right. who are going to bear the brunt of their decisions.
Right.
And with education, it's who decides.
Right. Well, and I think that we need to just make an important distinction. Representative government doesn't necessarily mean that you do whatever anybody tells you to do because you represent the people.
Mm-hmm.
Each person that is elected into office takes an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution of Utah, in that case, and the United States of America. And so you are electing someone to represent you in defending your liberty and in upholding that sacred document, which I believe is sacred.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're going to have people that come to you and don't agree with what you're doing, don't agree with your way of thinking. And that doesn't mean they aren't representing you, because we cannot make everyone happy.
Well, like you said, that people are going to be across the board, but you run right. on principles.
And you run on principles.
What you were saying, people who stand for things, these are the things that I will right. advocate for while I am yes. in office. And the majority says, we want this.
Right. And you look for, you defend the Constitution, and people interpret that different. So we have people that think differently than me that feel like they're taking that oath seriously to defend the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but that is such an important thing to remember, is that we don't live in a democracy. And so when we talk about representative government, it doesn't mean that anybody that calls them, they need to do anything that they say, because people voted for them based on the principles that they stood for.
And the oath that they took.
And the oath that they took.
Yeah. And so at the end of the day, we need to have people who are accountable to the people, the representatives yes. who are accountable to the people.
Yes.
So that the people can actually have an input and have a say in what their kids right. are learning. And right. if it's appointed, you know, that would be wonderful if the governor was always perfect and the people that he or she appointed were always going to be perfect and always agreed with you. Right. But that's never going to happen. And that's why we need people with diverse views that right. are accountable to the people at the end of the day.
And the closer to home you can get, the better.
Yeah. Well, that's a whole other podcast.
I know. We need to have another podcast on that.
Well, thank you so much, Elisa. I really appreciate
it. Thank you so much for having me.
This has been the Family Freedom Podcast with Wendy Hart. Follow this podcast, share with your friends and neighbors, and add to the Voices of Family and Freedom.